Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 10, Text 16. Kastvam nigudascharasi dvijanam. Kastvam nigudascharasi dvijanam. Bibharshi sutram katamo vadhuta. Bibharshi sutram katamo vadhuta. Kasyasi kutratya ivapi kasmat. Kasyasi kutratya ivapi kasmat. Kshemaya nasche dasinota shukla. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. King Rahugana said, O Brahmana, you appear to be moving in this world very much covered and unknown to others. Who are you? Are you a learned Brahmana and a saintly person? I see that you are wearing a sacred thread. Are you one of those exalted, liberated soul saints such as Dattatreya and other highly advanced learned scholars? May I ask whose disciple you are? Where do you live? Why have you come to this place? Is your mission in coming here to do good for us? Please let me know who you are. Purport. Maharaj Rahugana was very anxious to receive further enlightenment in Vedic knowledge because he could understand that Jada Bharat belonged to a Brahmana family either by disciplic succession or by birth in a Brahmana dynasty. As stated in the Vedas, tadvijnanartham sagurum eva abhigacchet. Rahugana was accepting Jada Bharat as a guru. But a guru must prove his position not only by wearing a sacred thread, but by advancing knowledge in spiritual life. It is also significant that Rahugana asked Jada Bharat which family he belonged to. There are two types of families, one according to the dynasty, other according to disciplic succession. In either way, one can be enlightened. The word Shukla refers to a person in the mode of goodness. If one wants to receive spiritual knowledge, he must approach a bona fide Brahmana guru, either in the disciplic succession or in a family of learned Brahmanas. So today we are reading about the first questions which Maharaj Rahugana asks Jada Bharat. It's a very simple or a very ordinary type of event. A king is habituated to chastising his subordinates. There is nothing very abnormal, strange about it. And the king must have had the habit of, as usually kings do have, getting things done by shouting or ordering his subordinates. So he didn't do it specifically just to agitate or antagonize Jada Bharat. But as people in authority, they feel unless you shout, things don't get done. In management jargon, this is called the decibel system of management, where the louder you shout, the job gets done. Like if you go to a government office, you have to shout, not necessary to get the job done, but many times to wake up that clerk. So, especially in many offices, this is the norm. So, similarly, the king is going to meet Lord Kapiladev. He's going to Kapilashram. He's a very saintly king. He is on his way to get some guidance. So kings in those times were knowing the fact that Rajniti is good for getting things done from the people. But for your own mind and senses and about the own goal of your life, you need to associate with a saintly person. And there is no doubt about it. You have to. So, he's just on his way. In one place, the palanquin carriers, they have one man short. So they put this Jadabharat, who is readily available. If we just see the dialogue as to how it progressed, this is from verse number 9 of chapter 10. That when the king very angrily chastises Jadabharat, "You fool, don't you know that you have to do a job properly?" In fact, he very sarcastically, all sarcasm is put in his statements, that he says, "My God, how troublesome this is for you, isn't it? You appear to be very fatigued because you have carried this palanquin for a very long time and without anybody's assistance, you alone are carrying it. Besides, due to your old age, you have become greatly troubled. My dear friend, I see that you are not very firm, not very strong and stout. Other people are not cooperating with you properly." Now, every statement, every word of it was meant to ignite that anger. Like you may, if somebody is a fool, you may call him, "Oh, how wise you are." Of course, sometimes you may just say, "You fool," but when you have to be really sarcastic, very strong, you may say, "Oh, how wise you are." So similarly here, the king is criticizing Jadabharat with sarcastic words. Little does he know that this one encounter with a person like Jadabharat is going to open a big, you can say, avenue of knowledge in his life. So, Jadabharat, he understands that after all, the king is in his bodily conception of life. He thinks, "I am the king. This body, the robes, the crown, the helmet, the weapons, the staff, the surrounding paraphernalia, all this makes me king." So, Jadabharat says, "My dear king and hero, whatever you have spoken sarcastically is certainly true. Actually, this is not chastisement. But because the body is the carrier, the load carried by the body does not belong to me, for I am the spirit soul. So there is no contradiction in what you have said. As you have hinted, I have not labored carrying the palanquin, for I am detached from the body. You said I am not stout and strong. And these words are befitting a person who does not know the distinction between body and soul. The body may be fat or thin, but no learned man would say such things of the spirit soul. As far as the spirit soul is concerned, I am neither fat nor skinny. So you are correct when you say that I am not very stout. Also, if the object of this journey and the path leading there were mine, there would be many troubles for me." That means why you are taking this particular path, why you want to go to that particular place. If that was also something related to me, there would be some trouble. Just like if you read the papers now and it comes to, the news comes that Bombay-Pune rail link is delayed by 6 hours. You may say, "I don't have to go there. So no problem for me." But just in case you get a call and your business or branch office says, "Immediately rush to Pune." Oh, then all the problems in that path, they become your problems. So when there is no association, there is no problem. But when there is a need to take that path, then all the problems of that path, they become your problems. So therefore, he says, it relates to a body, so there is no trouble for me at all. Then he gives a long list of things. fatness, thinness, bodily mental distress, thirst, hunger, fear, disagreement, desires for material happiness, old age, sleep, attachment for material possessions, anger, lamentation, illusion, and identification of the body with the self are all transformations of the material covering of the spirit soul. So just like the tree is reflected in the lake, when the water is still, you see the exact tree in the reflection on the surface of water. But let's say somebody puts a pebble in it, and then the ripples are formed. And somebody just seeing the reflection will think that the tree is trembling. Tree is not trembling. Tree is as it is. Because we have taken our gaze away from the main object and we are looking at the reflection. The reflection trembles, the reflection appears to be various. The 10th canto explains, if you have various kinds of liquids, then the reflection of the moon, if the moon is reflected in water, in honey, in oil, you will find different shapes of the moon. Honey is very less viscous. You'll have, is more viscous or less viscous? More viscous. It is thicker. That will have a different impression of the moon. While things which are more or less viscous will have a different reflection. So what the Shastras are trying to say is that we are just seeing reflections and trying to make some conclusions from that when the real object is not even seen or not even discussed or not even studied properly. So, you have unnecessarily accused me of being dead though alive. I can only say that if this is the case everywhere, because everything material has its beginning and end. King, if you think that you are the king and master and trying to order me, that also is incorrect, because it is just a temporary position. Today you are a king and I am your servant. Tomorrow it may change. And you may be my servant and I am your master. So these are the positions simply created by providence. Shakespeare said, all the world's a stage and we are all actors. So, in a new drama, we may get the lines of a beggar. Now you cannot say, oh, in the previous drama I was a rich man. A drama is a drama. So therefore, but we get identified with that particular role. We feel attached. Imagine if a king who did an actor who did a very nice performance in a drama and everybody gave a standing ovation. Wow, what a performance. If he comes out of the theater and tells the traffic to move, nobody will obey him. Because he's a king, he says, okay, hey, make the traffic clear, I want to go home. He'll be a laughing stock. People will say that we accepted that you are a good actor, but that doesn't mean that you can come out of your theater and start ruling things outside. Similarly, people who are acting and people who are similarly under the same, you can't say illusion, but they want to see that acting, they appreciate it. But other people, the real world, who have nothing to do with this drama, they don't accept it. Similarly, when very successful materialists, when these people go to sadhus and say, I am so rich, I am so powerful, I am very famous, I am very learned, the sadhus simply laugh at that. Because your erudition, your money, that has nothing to do in the real world. Of course, there is always this debate, which is the real world? Because illusion is so strong that those who are in illusion, they will never know they are an illusion. Otherwise, how it can be illusion? So therefore, we need a guide. We need a yardstick. We need some absolute authority. Otherwise, people will always keep on arguing. I was in Mayapur. I was taking a stroll near our Gurukul area. And some guests had come two or three were from Delhi, other were from Calcutta. And they were asking a few questions. Who studies here? So I said, there are boys from all over the world. So what do you teach them about the real world? I said, what do you mean? They said, well, you know, I said there is someone from Australia, someone from Sweden. And they were amazed looking at young West European boys in typical Vedic dress. So they study here mathematics, little bit of geography, history, whatever is applicable to help them pass the exams. Otherwise they do Sanskrit and mainly devotional practices. So they were not interested much in that. They were saying, what do you teach them about the real world? So I asked a question, it depends on what you call real. For them, what they do and study here, that is the real world. And one of them was very thoughtful and he said, well, you are right. That I have my business and my problems and everything, and I may think that is the real world. At the same time, I am trying to get away from it. Isn't it? What is a air-conditioned office in a hot city like Bombay? You are forced to get away from the real situation. Artificially, you have to make that situation. And afterwards you find that your body doesn't agree with the violent changes in temperatures. So what is the real thing? Devam Prabhu used to give an example of a king who had a dream that he's a butterfly. All night he had his dream. And he was going from tree to tree and very happy. And he woke up, he had to do the duties of a king. So he asked his minister, tell me one thing. I was so happy with that dream. Am I a king who was dreaming of a butterfly the whole night? Or am I a butterfly who's dreaming that I am a king during this whole day? Please tell me. Of course, the minister couldn't answer. But that's how this whole material world is organized. So, by these kind of replies, Jadabharata actually caught the king. He has stopped his flow of his thoughts and he has made him ponder as to what did I do? I called this fellow so many bad names and he doesn't appear to be a fool. My dear king, if you still think that you are the king and I am your servant and you should order me and I should follow your orders, I can say that this differentiation is temporary. It only expands from conventions or from just usage. I do not see any other cause. In that case, who is the master, who is the servant? Everyone is being forced by the laws of material nature. Therefore, no one is master and no one is servant. Nonetheless, if you think that you are the master and I am the servant, I shall accept this. Please order me. What can I do for you? You call me rascal, dull, crazy fellow. I'm going to chastise you. Then you'll come to your senses. In this regard, let me say, although I live like a dull, deaf and dumb man, Jadabharata is saying himself, I am actually self-realized. What will you gain by punishing me? If your calculation is true and I'm a madman, then your punishment will be like beating a dead horse. Sanskrit says, pishta pesha. Like grinding flour. You know, when you put in a grinding machine, you put grains, you get atta, flour. If you put the same atta again, what happens? It comes in no time. There is nothing to be ground, so how can that work? So, Jadabharata is telling, if you want to chastise me, that's like grinding flour. Pishta pesha. It won't have any effect. Or flogging a dead horse. When a madman is punished, he is not cured of his madness. If he doesn't understand why he is being beaten, how will he understand he should not do that thing in the first place? Now, the king is sufficiently disturbed. After hearing all this, this is the last thing he expected on the road, somewhere. Just imagine the situation. This is not the place for an enlightening Bhagavatam class. And especially when this was not hinted at. He was thinking, I'll go to that ashram and there I will get some knowledge. And unexpectedly, on the road itself, he got this. So, this is the experience of being visibly shaken. So, Krishna makes his advent like that. Spiritual knowledge is Krishna himself. So, normally in the lives of devotees, it's always like that. I'll just give two examples of how the greatest of all authorities, Krishna himself, how does he understand the situation of accepting a spiritual master? Or what is the importance of a spiritual teacher? Prabhupada says in this purport here, Tad vijnanartham sa gurum eva vigacchet. Here it is said, Tad vijnana. Tad here means that topic. Now what is that topic? Whenever we have the word idam, this, it means this material world. Idam, this, is the material world. And tat, that, is the spiritual realm. So anyone who wants information about that spiritual realm, it doesn't say you buy some book or go to some course. Sa gurum, you have, that person has to go to a guru. And Prabhupada says in one lecture, is it optional? Can you just take a home study course or be your own guru? Like there is this, Prabhupada always taught about the new age gurus who say there is no need of gurus. They are gurus, but their philosophy is you don't need gurus. One American fellow is Indian by birth. He says, what do you mean by guru? In America, there is an expression, G. G means surprise or whatever. So he says, guru means G, you are you. G, you are you. That's what it is. Just understand, I am me. And that is self-realization. No need of anything else. So this also was foretold that in Kali Yuga, people will not be enthusiastic for real spiritual knowledge. So Lord Krishna, after he kills Kamsa, he tells his parents that he and Balram both, that is time that we went to a proper spiritual teacher. So Vasudev, Devaki, their hearts willing with love, they agree. Shukadeva Goswami describes this event very nicely. Prabhavau sarva vidyanam sarvagyo jagadishvarau. He says, Prabhavau sarva vidyanam. These two personalities, they are actually the originators, the original cause of sarva vidya. They don't need to learn anything from anywhere. Krishna and Balaram, these two personalities, they don't need to learn. They are the supreme personality of Godhead. Nanya siddhamalam jnanam guhamanau narehitau. Na anya, they don't need to take help from anyone. Na anya siddham amalam jnanam. They're already filled with knowledge themselves. Guhamanau narehitai. They are living very confidentially, covered, as if they are simple human beings. They are not actually. But they are living like that. So what do they do? Atho gurukule vasam icchanta upajagmatu. They have this desire to live in a gurukul. Kasham sandipanim nama hi avanti puravasinam. One specific brahmana, his name is Sandipani Muni, an inhabitant of Kashi, who is staying in Kashi Nagari, but currently is staying in Avantipur. So they chose him. So it is the Lord who chooses his devotees to serve as his spiritual masters. Narad Muni, when he saw that Krishna is studying, Krishna actually is learning something in the ashram of Sandipani Muni, so he said, ha, this is just like the clouds are showering rain And somebody is saying, good, the clouds are showering rain, therefore the ocean is getting some water. The ocean is filling up because the clouds are showering rain. But where do the clouds get the rain in the first place? They draw their water from the ocean, isn't it? So similarly, whenever we see some devotee acting as a guru of Krishna, it is not that Krishna somehow forgot knowledge and he is getting some refresher courses. He is giving that supremely fortunate devotee the chance to serve him. How does Sandipuni Muni know that this disciple of mine is not an ordinary person? He kept that within his heart, was very happy that I am getting Krishna and Balaram as my disciples. And when their education was over, he said, now, he told his wife, we will ask some Guru Dakshina which befits this, his position as a Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anybody else, I would have said, give me 10 gold coins or give me a cow, or give me some piece of land. To his disciple or disciples, Krishna Balaram, Sandipuni Muni says, bring me back my dead son. Now just imagine, Shukdev Goswami says, this is one hint, this is a barometer, this is an indication that Sandipuni Muni all the time was aware as to the supernatural position of his disciple. So Krishna and Balaram go to the ocean, and what do? They just say, hey ocean, give back the sun. Now you try yourself, tell the ocean, do something. And the ocean god comes and he says, I am sorry, I didn't take them away. There was a demon in the form of a conch shell and heat might have took it away. So it is commented by the acharyas that obviously this demon was more powerful than the ocean god. Otherwise the ocean god would not have allowed such a thing to happen of Sandipuni Muni's son being kidnapped. So they go down, they take the conch shell. They kill the demon and say, at least the conch shell is useful, we'll keep it. And they now think that the boy is dead. So they go to Yamaraj. Second hint that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna just goes on the outskirts of Yamaraj's city, Samyamani, and just blows that conch shell. What happens? Yamaraj himself comes out and he says, any service? So all these facts, they point out that Krishna and Balaram are no ordinary people. In fact, when Krishna blows that conch shell, that vibration strikes hellish planets. The boiling pots in which sinners are boiled in oil, they become cool. Those fierce creatures who are supposed to rip open people's abdomen and take out their entrails and run away with that very ghastly kind of things, all these animals have become tame, like pet cats and dogs. So that is the effect of Krishna's presence. And we may have a little perverted experience when previously kings or sometimes presidents, they come to power and there is a presidential pardon. All criminals who have done this particular kind of act, free. No matter whether you came yesterday or you are here for the next 10 years or so, pardon. So similarly, Krishna can pardon that, and that shows his supreme power. Similarly, when Krishna came as Lord Chaitanya, he is not externally moving around as the personality of Godhead. But the moment Ishwar Puri came, and people were asking, who is this Ishwar Puri? And he said, I am just a most ordinary devotee. But Lord Chaitanya knew that this is my spiritual master. So he went to the native place of the birthplace of Ishwar Puri. And with such reverence, he bowed down. Every day, it is described, he would eat a piece of dirt, mud, that this is from that place where my guru appeared. Now, of course, this also may be duplicated or imitated. But when Ishwarpuri and Lord Chaitanya actually started conversing, Ishwarpuri knew that my disciple is a very good grammar scholar. So he said, I have written some passages. Would you like to check them for editing or any suggestion you would like to make? So Lord Chaitanya was very honored. He took that and he said, no mistakes. How can there be mistakes? You are my spiritual master. I can't dare find any mistakes. He says, no, you check again. He said, I did. He said, no, do it again. So the next day Lord Chaitanya brought it and said, well, there is no mistake as such. But if you insist, this particular line, this word I think is a bit, can be changed to this word. Now this was done in the mood of service. But Ishwarpuri said, no, what I have done is correct. And the Lord said, oh yes, it's all correct. So, this is how that loving exchange took place between the spiritual master of all the worlds, Jagat Guru. But when he comes as a devotee or when he takes a guru, he actually has that reverential attitude. In fact, incidents like these, which come in Srimad Bhagavatam, are also a sort of reminder for each one of us independently, especially those who have accepted spiritual masters, to remind ourselves of that particular moment when we actually decided to accept somebody as our guru. Check the situation around it. We all can do that exercise mentally. What was that thing in my heart? How exactly was the chain of events? Because that particular moment when someone is actually in contact with a spiritual master is something which is of prime importance in our spiritual lives. We always long to see Krishna's hand in whatever we do. Isn't it? We want to see Krishna making miracles. But the greatest miracle Krishna performs when he makes someone meet a bona fide spiritual teacher. Of the two students who joined Srila Prabhupada's movement, Prabhupada came by the boat Jaladuta. Jala, water. Duta, ambassador. And Prabhupada liked that description of himself as India's spiritual ambassador. So he liked that. This is a very nice name for the boat. The boat docked at Boston Pier or Commonwealth Pier, if that is the correct name. And as Prabhupada came to New York, these two hippies, they took that same boat. They couldn't afford the flight. So they took the same boat. And on the next voyage, they came to India. And what did they do? They went to Rishikesh, Haridwar, some other ashrams, came all the way down the Ganges, where the Ganges flows, Kashi, Hooghly, Howrah. And they could meet many holy men. They went to many ashrams. Unfortunately, they couldn't find someone they could relate to. It took them almost a year or so, more than that. And they came back via similar boat back to New York. By that time, Prabhupada also had finished his business in Butler, Pennsylvania, where he was just preaching in some Lions clubs or YMCAs, and he said, no, I am not come here to just speak in somebody's bedroom or living room and give some lectures. I am here for making this thing appeal to the masses. So it was 1 year of failure, you can say that, for Prabhupada. And when he came to New York, he found this place, very cheap looking place in the Bowery. And Hayagriva Das, who later became his disciple, he was crossing the street. Because he had seen somebody in India, He could immediately recognize that this person walking in saffron dress is actually a holy man. So he writes in his book, a very wonderful book, Hare Krishna Explosion. He said, I stopped and he stopped. And we looked at each other. The traffic was going on. The moment the traffic became a bit slack, I rushed. They were on the opposite side of the street. I rushed and met him. Are you from India? And he said, yes. Are you from America? And I said, yes. So he says, I'd like to talk to you. He said, sure. I give talks 3 times a week. Can I come? He said, yes, and bring your friends. So Prabhupada was almost ready. And then every encounter, Hare Guru Prabhu says, was just like meeting some long lost friend. And one day he popped that question. He said, do you know that we had actually gone to India in search of a teacher? He says, many of them kept glancing at my gold watch. So I decided not to have anything to do with them. In fact, even today, any ordinary person, when he wants to begin his quest for spiritual inquiry, there is a Chinese saying that many who speak do not know, and many who do not know, they speak. So what to do? You want to ask people something, but those who know, they do not speak. And those who speak, they do not know. It is also a requirement, if we go by traditional Vedic understanding, that the question is more enlightening than the answer sometimes. You have to have the required desire to ask the proper questions. What is to be done in Kali Yuga when that question doesn't arise? People don't like to ask a question that, how can we find a bona fide guru? Is that, at least in my life for the first full quarter, 25 years, that was never the main issue in my life. Where can I get a guru? So therefore, the way in which Krishna intervenes. What exactly is a guru? Guru is a tattva. Guru is not a person. Guru is not just a personality. But guru is a tattva. It's a truth. It is Krishna himself who takes that particular mercy form and sort of injects himself in the lives of people. So therefore, that particular moment, that particular situation, a sincere disciple will always respect that, will always remember that, and can understand that why I am searching for miracles, this is something which I have found myself. Many times Prabhupada would be asked by his disciples, what did we do? Or what credits we had to meet such a person like you? And Prabhupada was realistic. He says, no, you had none. I had to create them. So that is the specific mercy of a spiritual master. So therefore, Prabhupada talks about two kinds of families. One is according to the dynasty. That means the son becomes the spiritual teacher afterwards, and the other according to disciplic succession. Putra and Shishya are considered equal. Even if you are not somebody's putra, if you are somebody's Shishya, you are supposed to serve that person just like you may serve your father, or even more. But there is a point of caution. In those families who act as spiritual teachers, where the son automatically assumes the post of a teacher, there is some problem of corruption. His Holiness Gaur Govind Maharaj, one of his lectures, he talks of these so-called families. Like sometimes we meet people and we say, why don't you take up the process? Oh, I already have a guru. What does it do? I don't know. What about knowledge? Well, once in a year a guru comes to our place, So Gaura Goswami Maharaj said, there is the two things happening, pranam and pranami. So the people do the guru pranam, the guru takes the pranami and goes away. So that kind of guru won't help. That kind of mantra also won't help, that kind of diksha also won't help. Because there has to be the living disciplic succession. It's just like if you rearrange the electrical connections, and if there is a socket, old socket, and if you put your plug there and you start your machine, it won't start because there is no electric supply. You say, no, but the socket is there. But the things have changed. So you may wait till eternity, but nothing will happen. So similarly, those who have this, it's also one kind of false abhiman, vritha abhiman, that I come from this family of gurus. No, that's not true. Even in Lord Chaitanya's descent, Advaitacharya's sons, three sons of Advaitacharya, they kept on claiming that because our father was Mahavishnu, we are also as good as that, we are also gurus. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes that they became asar. Sar is the sum total or the concise form, the conclusion, conclusive truth. They became bereft of that. They got disciples. They got wealth. So therefore in India, this system has become like a mercantile issue. In fact, Prabhupada said in his childhood, he used to see a man early morning would be wearing saffron robes and going to homes and begging. Afternoon coming home and putting other civil clothes and doing some other work. That was the extent. So therefore when Prabhupada's friend was dragging him, let us go and see this saintly person. And he said, I have seen enough. He was fed up with that kind of attitude. But only when he met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In fact, in the lecture, Prabhupada said, my Guru Maharaj defeated me. And that was the most fortunate day in my life. I should have joined him immediately. Then he says, I was in Maya. Of course, everybody knows Prabhupada is not in Maya. But he said, I should have joined him. But then, like I was discussing with a devotee the other day, he says that sometimes we, in devotional life, we want to speed up things. We say, 6 months standing 16 rounds, okay, now diksha, then second diksha. So the person is ready with all the externals, but then the long road starts. It's something like running a marathon. There are 2,000 runners and all the stadium is filled with cheering people and there are reporters and then the shot rings and you're out. And you leave the cheering crowd, you leave the stadium and then you are on the long road alone. And sometimes those long marathons in some cities where there's not much population, they say, you run now, the next water facility is up after 6 kilometers. And you'll find in a marathon, most of the time, it's not like 100 meters where your next competitor is breathing down your neck. In a marathon, your next competitor, you do not know who's in front of you, you don't know how many behind you. Sometimes you're just alone. You might just see the camera crew going on a big vehicle, zoom past you. So that is a time when you need to have done your homework really very well. You should know, of course, when the thing gets over, you'll be again in the stadium, there'll be thousands of people again. So similarly, even in Bhakti Yoga, when we join and we have a lot of interaction, there are people to cheer us. After some time, the long road starts. At that time, we have not done our homework really well, not knowing what to expect. There might be a chance that we might just sit or take another shortcut or drop out of the marathon. So, that problem may occur. So, we were just having this discussion about why we feel to speed up so many things. Prabhupada met his guru, that first contact, that first meeting, he was convinced. Prabhupada's statement was, Lord Chaitanya's mission is in very good hands. When did he take Diksha? After 11 years. 11 years after he met his spiritual master, he formalized it. When did he get his instruction to begin preaching? Somewhere around 1933. When did he actually start preaching in America? 1965. Prabhupada gave up his family life, sort of, in 54. He took sannyas in 59. So after sannyas in 59, till the time he reached America, there were 6 years. And one day while Bhavananda Prabhu was massaging him, he said, "Those 6 were the most difficult years of my life. I had to go out of Jhansi. I had nothing to do. My family connection was gone. My business line was gone. I was thinking I'll have some business. It will help me in my preaching. But nothing. Absolutely nothing." But he said, "But I had faith. That my guru, because he ordered me, I have to do it." So that one connection, it is not like Bhakti Sansapti Thakur did not in front of a big assembly tell that, "So now I am anointing Abhay Charan De as my successor and he is going to do it." His remarks were just like offhand things somewhere on the banks of Radhakund. He says, "I have this mathas and people generally get accustomed, very attached to rooms. So if you get money, print books, okay?" It was that kind of statement. But it was Prabhupada who gave it such seriousness. So similarly, here also we will find later that Maharaj Rahugan, he went for something. You try. But Krishna decides when to come in your life. Maharaj Rahugan is on his way. He's not on a way for some entertainment show. He's going for taking some knowledge. But just like that, Krishna decides to appear. So therefore, Krishna's appearance in our life is also like the appearance of something which we can't prevent. Once you start coming, nobody can prevent it. If Krishna decides to leave, no one can tell him, "Please don't go." So therefore, it's not a very ordinary event. As I said in the beginning, to chastise somebody for asking is like, every day he must be chastising 10 people or 100 people. But this one thing, because this first thing that you appear to be covered and unknown to others. Who are you? Are you a learned Brahmana, saintly person? You are wearing a sacred thread. Are you one of those exalted, liberated saints such as Dattatreya? Whose are you? This is a typical Sanskrit Vedic inquiry. That means, whose disciple are you? That means people were assuming that if somebody has knowledge, he has to have a guru. Today, if you ask somebody, "Very nice playing a violin. Where did you learn it?" "I learned myself." Very smugly, there is an air of disdain about getting some knowledge from authority. There is hatred, there is animosity towards accepting somebody as my teacher. We work for the BBT, so we were looking for the translator. One fellow in Pune, we mentioned that we have this good book on word usage by this particular popular English Marathi teacher. He said, "Oh, he's my guru. I learned from him." Of course, I don't agree with him on all things. That means, don't feel that, I am loyal to him. I learned something from him, but now it's over. So this is the typical impersonalist or Mayavadi response to a guru-disciple relationship. Just to end with that, Prabhupada was taking his morning stroll, and how he would take an incident to teach his disciples is also wonderful. There is a small brook, small water flowing, canal-like, and Bhavananda Prabhu immediately could know that we have to cross. So as a dutiful disciple, he jumped out on the other side and waited for Prabhupada to come. So Prabhupada held out his cane, took out his hand. So he caught the hand, held the cane and helped Prabhupada come on the other side. As soon as Prabhupada came on the other side, Prabhupada was holding Bhavanam Prabhu's hand, he just violently brushed it aside. And he said, what happened? Any transgression? Any problem? Prabhupada said, Mayavadis are like this. And he said, what? He said, they take the help of a guru to cross over from ignorance to knowledge. When they come there, they just so urgently want to forget that debt of gratitude. Or it's just like your guru is up on a ladder and he's helping you. Come, 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 come. Then you're both on the same rung. You tell him, so now there is no difference between you and me. We are in the same status. Now the same status doesn't depend on just you being on the same level with him. What about the same degree of knowledge? What about that respect? So Prabhupada said, just see. And our process is every day what we sing in Guru Puja. Chakshu dana dilo jai, janme janme prabhu sei. It's not just a question of one birth where you are my guru. Birth after birth after birth, we would like to worship this personality. Who is Krishna's mercy in action? That's what a guru is. So later we will hear from Jadabharat as to what exactly is needed to advance in spiritual life. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Comments, Srinathji Prabhu?
Oh, I have two questions. The first question is not so important. The second question is important. The first question is that King Rahugana was the king. Right? He may not be having a king of whole planet, but he is the king of something.
Sindhu Sovir province.
Yeah. That's what. So here we find that he doesn't have even one person extra. So he's short of one man to carry his palanquin. This is the first question. Second question is that you said...
No, let's start with the first question. See, there are many things which happen. Even in a big inauguration of some big convention hall, and it's a Royal Society for geographical exploration or whatever, and sometimes the president finds there is no scissor to cut the ribbon. It's a multi-million pound society and everything. Sometimes these things do happen. So... material nature, there are sometimes, even for big powerful people, there are some small lapses. So this is one such incident. And the very fact that because of that shortage of one person, the whole thing happened and Rahugana could meet Jadabharat and talk. So it's also an arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Next question.
You said that Gurutva has no personality. And another statement you made that whenever you find some knowledgeable person, you must be having some guru. So, Guru Tattva also has a personality.
Well, what so I meant was, it is not that guru doesn't have personality. I said Guru Tattva is the main thing. That Guru Tattva may come in any form. It may come as a human being. The Avadhuta talks of the tree is my guru. The sky is my guru. Earth is my guru. So, any element can act as a guru, because guru is a tattva. That one person is not Prabhupada's offering to his guru. So he said, when I speak of Gurudev, it doesn't mean that my Gurudev is different from anybody's Gurudev. Because as guru, they are all one. They all are servants of Krishna. In that way, I said, he has no specific personality, but he is a person. If your guru is a person, so that his statement is correct, that he has a personality. But it doesn't mean that this person alone is guru and there is nobody else who can be guru. Not like that. Then you should understand it is a tattva which is represented by whoever Krishna empowers. Yes, the back.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. You just talked about this example of Avadhut or Dattatreyaji giving instances that I have made this as Guru, this as Guru. Often people counter us when we talk about Guru Shishya Parampara, and they say that, we are followers of Datta Bhagavan, and like, he did not accept, why do I accept? Or such kind of examples, that God himself, sometimes they don't accept that he's God, and like, he did it, so I'm doing it, or I'm following him. So, such people, what do we answer them as?
See, that's where, that shows the relative status of that particular person. People follow Buddha, and Buddha said there is no God. But we know that Buddha himself is a Shaktivesh avatar. So if they follow that person's teachings properly, there is some advancement. So even Dattatreya, he is an incarnation of God. He didn't accept any guru, that's true. And those who follow his guidelines, they get benefit. Those who imitate him, they don't get any benefit. In fact, in one prayer in Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that, I pray to Lord Dattatreya, please save me from impersonalistic teachings. Similarly, I pray to Lord Buddha, you save me from atheistic teachings. So they who preach these teachings also have the power to save others who pray to them. So ours is not a sampradaya of those who try to imitate. Not anukarana, but anusarana. That's it. Yes?
Yeah. You gave a nice example of the marathon thing, and then you made the point that the homework is not done properly. So can you expand on, actually, the homework is a practical application of devotional service in our life.
Well, what exactly I had in mind was, we don't need to rush through things. We need to assimilate. We need to see whether we are ready or not. And in this way, once we, like, I personally have that statement of Prabhupada as a favorite statement. He says in the Bhagavad Gita, of the slow process of devotional service. Prabhupada also has called devotional service fast. So it's fast and slow both. Just like Rupa Goswami explains, what you need as an ingredient for rapid growth in bhakti, he said six. But the first two are opposites of each other, enthusiasm and patience. So just today morning I was thinking, if you are preaching to someone and he seems to have a lot of patience, but not much enthusiasm, so you need to tell him that, you know, do it fast. If you are in a position to cultivate someone like that. And if you find somebody is already very enthusiastic, gung-ho about everything, then the required medicine for that person is more patience. So just like in Ayurveda, it is not that just because some medicine is good, therefore it is given. You have to see whether it is applicable or not. So therefore, a good teacher, a bona fide spiritual teacher, he will see the position of the particular disciple, the student, and guide him accordingly. And of course, others can draw their various remarks from it or various conclusions from it. But the fact remains that of all the instructions which are general in nature, there are many which are very specific in nature. So when we understand that and we take care of everybody with that person's status where he is. Same example, if we can expand, what do you need to run in a marathon? You need solid stamina. What do you need to win the 100 meters dash? Shishi Radha Gopinath ki. For that you need that sprint power. If you use the 100 meters strategy in a marathon, after half a kilometer you will just fall flat. Or you may use the marathon strategy in 100 meters. Just see how comical it may look. So depending upon a particular individual's case, we need to apply that so that we don't get caught by surprise. Just to give a contemporary example, Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, was a very famous boxer. So he was asked, which is the punch or a hook or a cut or whatever which you fear the most? Like everybody, every sports has its stars and they have one nemesis. They have one particular kind of thing which they can't handle and that they fear the most. So Mohammadari's answer was, the one I do not see coming. He didn't say this particular style or that particular style. Because as in boxing, as with everything else, surprise factor is the most dangerous thing. You get surprised, you lose off balance, and then you start, all the troubles start. Similarly, even in life, once you know things are coming this way, that surprise element is out of it. And that's why you find devotees, acharyas, their whole life, they're never surprised. Prabhupada is in Mauritius, taking a nice stroll in a car. It's a very beautiful place. It's called the paradise of the Indian Ocean. And suddenly accident. Somehow Prabhupada was told to go to the back seat or change the sides. So it's not that his end is the one which is hit, but his knee is bleeding. And that very day Prabhupada dictated a letter. He can read it in a folio. And Prabhupada said, this world is a dangerous place. We should expect calamities at any moment. So sometimes people would say, Prabhupada, he has joined and we are becoming very big. And we would say, Krishna's mercy. Or sometimes some bad news. Oh, this person has left us. Or we got some reversal here. Or this problem. This world is full of problems. And that's why he could remain steady. So therefore, once we also get accustomed to not getting surprised by this material world, we can find that we also can handle things. Of course, it takes a lot of practice. So I'll stop here. Okay, one last. I shouldn't be keeping everybody waiting. They're all Nirjal fasters.
Prabhuji, we understand that we cannot acquire knowledge without Guru. I'm not talking of spiritual knowledge, the other knowledge. And we should also respect that Guru. Maybe we are getting bhautik knowledge. But today we see in colleges, the students, how they disrespect the professors and teachers, even in schools. And in our time, even a book fell down, we'll put it on our head. Now they read comics in the commode. So there is no respect for books, no respect for teachers, no respect for professors. But still they do PhDs, mathematics, physics, chemistry and all. I'm really surprised.
So?
I'm surprised they don't give any respect and still they are acquiring knowledge.
So this is a comment, right? How is it possible that they get knowledge? Okay, without respecting how they get knowledge. So therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in one of his poems, Se jnana agyana bhelo. He said, this knowledge is not real knowledge. It is actually agyan. Jada vidya jato mayara vaibhava tomara bhajane badha. He says, all jada vidya, everything to do with this material energy, especially manipulation of material energy, he says is mayara vaibhava. It's an illusory opulence. And the one striking feature of this opulence is, he's saying, oh Krishna, this knowledge is tomar bhajane badha. The number one qualification of material knowledge is it is the biggest obstacle to worshipping Krishna. Jivana mohiya makes your life completely illusory, makes you bewildered. Anitya samsare, you get attached to this temporary world. Jiva ko banaye gadha, it makes you an ass. Of course, he's taking the whole thing on himself. He says, I forsook you, my Lord. I did this, I did that. But it's true for all of us. So the only test whether somebody has got spiritual knowledge or not, if you tell him that Krishna is the source of that knowledge, we should worship him. And he may say, yes, I think so. That means there is some trace of spirituality. But when somebody says, I have two PhDs and I have this and I have that, and they don't want to worship Krishna, that's the qualification. Like I am involved in some, with a very influential newspaper editor. Now this fellow says, I am a banker, I am a law expert, I am an astronomy enthusiast, I am an author, writer, poet, and editor now. I know Hare Krishnas, I have read their books. So in one article, I had used the word, the Supreme Lord. So he said, I think light would be more nicer word instead of God. So I said, why? There is a nice word, God is the source of everything. No, 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 people don't like the word God, they like the word light. So I was thinking, why, I have written it properly, why you want to change it? That anathema to the word God comes out, that they become so angry. In fact, Bhakti Tirtha Swami, he used to say that when he used to distribute Krishna books to people in communist countries, the only way to judge whether somebody is having some atheistic karma or somebody just plainly ignorant is to show them Krishna's face. He says sometimes people would start, that boiling rage would come on their face. I said, okay, now stop, no more discussion. And sometimes even very sinful people, superfluously, would see that face and say, oh, how beautiful. There is some hope. Then they would have some further discussion. So we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much.